Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Will all students please report to your homerooms? The voice boomed over the loudspeaker at Lewis Carroll Middle School. All students go directly to your homerooms. In Mrs. Barnes' room, there was a hush as she walked to the front of the room. We want you to know, she began carefully, that you are all safe here in school. Only quiet breathing could be heard now. There's been an emergency at the power plant, and the authorities are checking whether there is anything other than a bad accident. Will's hand went up. Was anyone hurt? He asked. We're not sure yet. There was an explosion inside, Mrs. Barnes replied. We'll give you any information when we receive it. Right now, we want you to know that the power here in school is not affected, and we will keep you here until we have been told that it's safe to let you go home. The radio and TV stations have announced that all students will remain in school until the superintendent is told it's safe for you to go, so your parents know where you are.
But how do we know if our parents are okay?
Demanded Kay.
What about my little brother? Betty called out. He's in daycare. Will we have to stay here all night? Asked Paul. That would be cool.
Some of the boys chuckled nervously. From a parent's perspective, what should schools be doing as they confront unusually stressful circumstances? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guests today can help us learn how schools do and should cope with stressful emergencies that happen while kids are in school. Dr. Ted Feinberg has been a school psychologist for 30 years and is now Assistant Executive Director of the National Association of School Psychologists. He has three grown children, twin sons and a daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Feinberg.
Thanks so much for the invitation.
Peter Branch is head of Georgetown Day School in Washington, D.C., an independent school for pre-kindergarten through grade 12. He is the father of three grown children, two boys and a girl, and two stepsons. We're glad to have you with us, Mr. Branch.
Thank you.
Could each of you tell us about your most stressful time in a school setting and how it was handled?
I've been a headmaster for 26 years in about four different schools, and there have been a variety of circumstances that have really put heavy impact on a school community. One year, the first week of school, a plane went down and two sets of parents in my school died. That obviously had a big impact on the community. I've also been in circumstance in which my lower school principal had a chair thrown at her by one of the parents, an angry parent.
Oh my goodness.
Myself, having expelled a child one time, my own children were threatened by the angry father. In another school situation, a mother shot the father of two children at the school.
Oh,
the shooting did not occur at the school. It occurred at the home, but obviously we had the two children to care for. And there have been other situations, threats to teachers, physical or sexual abuse of children. These are the kinds of things, death of a graduate at the hands of a boyfriend. These are the kinds of things that can happen and that schools, in the normal course of events, are going to be dealing with. I think that the two things that I see as having had the greatest impact on the school in the time that I've been at schools was the Challenger disaster at a time when many of our children in our elementary mm-hmm. school were watching, mm-hmm. and, of course, September 11th. And I put those in a slightly different category because the other events that I described are events that occurred, and then you were dealing with the
aftermath.
The
mm-hmm.
aftermath. The aftermath, in fact, of September 11th has been what we've been dealing with. And so for me, the stress of that over time, the unexpected, the uncertainty, the, in fact, the problem of trying to defend against what you do not know will happen has been extremely wearing. The immediate incident, we, of course, brought our children together. Being a school that's pre-K through grade 12, we did different things for different age groups, and I know you're going to talk about that later. Mm-hmm. But we brought the older children together, talked about the situation, held them within the school. We have a school in which a high school in which students may come and go if they're not in class. We would not release them except to their parents or to a guardian. And they were very responsive, but needless to say, they were anxious. At the high school, we did permit them to watch the events as they unfolded on TV. We turned off all TVs in our lower and middle school because we felt that was inappropriate. We felt that the students would be traumatized by that, particularly the younger children. And we did not, in fact, bring our youngest children together in a group. That can be frightening in and of itself. Some children are even upset at Thanksgiving assemblies, that larger hustle and bustle. So the younger children were dealt with one-on-one. Thanks to modern technology, we posted on our website what we were doing. And we have an email alert to parents that we use that to notify parents of that they could come and pick up their children, but that we would stay open and we would take care of the children until the last parent picked up the child. But the ongoing strain of being on alert and then on re-alert is, I think, the most stressful.
All schools and all communities anywhere in the country and maybe anywhere in the world will experience crises of varying kinds. And some of those are expected, predictable. Some of them are not. What we're looking at as a result of September 11th is certainly at the extreme end of that continuum, in that we don't typically have tragedies of that magnitude happening ever in this country and not typically anywhere in the world. But this was a profound crisis that has impacted not only schools but the entire populace of this country. One of the unique aspects of this particular crisis is that it is an unfinished crisis. Mm-hmm. And so we don't know what the end point is, and the complete healing process, if you will, can't take place until there is an end point. And so there's a whole series of complicating factors related to September 11th that, you know, we as a society and those of us who are concerned about children have to consider and address. Besides all of the school shootings that we have responded to, and we, meaning the National Emergency Assistance Team of the National Association of School Psychologists, and we have responded to most of the school shootings in this country and internationally, several as well. But in looking on a very microscopic level, the particular stressful event that I think was pivotal in my life in terms of making me passionately concerned about this topic, it was getting a call from a superintendent in a school district that I was working in on a mid-June Sunday afternoon. And typically one doesn't get calls from the superintendent on Sunday. His call indicated that a youngster who was celebrating, maybe over-celebrating high school graduation, had gone up to the mountains with some friends to kind of continue the celebratory activities, had been drinking beer with friends for much of the night, and then decided with his friends to go mountain climbing. The boys went up, and one slipped, fell 100 feet, and was killed. And so getting that call is important for your listeners to know about, because it is the absolute worst way to deal with a crisis. You don't deal with a crisis in the middle of a crisis and expect that it's going to come out well. We were able to cob together programs and services and supports for the school, for the children, for the staff, for the community, but it is clearly not the way to do business. And I'm hopeful that in the course of our discussion during this program, we will have the opportunity to talk about what schools can do, should do, must do to ensure that the safety of not only the children, but the staff, anyone who is involved with the school, and that the community and parents as well are all on the same page with regards to crisis preparedness and intervention.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about schools in a stressful time.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Ted Feinberg and Mr. Peter Branch about schools in stressful times. Mr. Branch, what do you think is the school's most important responsibility in a crisis?
Well, I would say unquestionably to ensure the safety of the individuals within the school, the students and the faculty. Certainly that's the one that everyone would want to have if they had their child at a school. I do think that that's the first one. I think secondly, you communicate what you're doing as quickly as you can to the larger community. And then you need to provide support and counseling to the students, sometimes to the parents, and most times to the faculty as well. So you've got a kind of a staged situation. And I think that the point that the doctor has made is that you need to have a plan of how to do that and how you're going to do that. Obviously, you cannot predict the unpredictable, but you can have in place crisis management teams. You can have some scenarios laid out. You certainly should have that material available to everybody. You're not going to be able to achieve the goals you want unless you know how you're going to do that.
So the idea is do your homework
and communicate.
Absolutely.
I think schools have a responsibility to take this topic seriously, and that one of the things that schools wrestle with all the time, whether they are independent schools, public schools, charter schools, whatever, is the heavy emphasis on academic achievement that is placed on administrators and staff to produce with children academic excellence. And sometimes what we find is that schools and the folks who run those institutions are so inundated with the responsibilities for academic achievement that they feel, where am I going to squeeze in another segment of time to address this issue? And my response to that is, you cannot afford not to. You have to find ways, and we know that there are creative ways to weave into the existing curriculum elements that relate to crisis intervention and prevention. And so it doesn't have to be a this or that kind of situation, but rather using the existing curriculum to enhance school safety, crisis preparedness agendas for children.
One of the comments that I would make is that there are a couple of models you can adopt. The typical model has been a security model, a lockdown model. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, you lose a lot of the identity of the school and in that process. There's another model which is more a community model, and it adopts the points that Ted has made, which is to look at character building and community identity and working with one another as part of your overall curriculum. And I would hope schools are doing that. I hope that is a prime goal of our schools, to not just grow up good students, but good students, people who care for each other. And if you do that, then it's easy in that process to have them understand why in a crisis, in a situation of danger, you're helping, working with each other, and what you have to do to follow the rules in order to make the situation one that's as positive as possible. But that community model, rather than the security model, is one that I really think that we have to adopt.
You probably have to use much more creativity than you do with the other one.
Well, the security model assumes that you can protect against everything, or makes the effort to protect against everything, and that's not going to happen. So you've got to be able to figure out how you can make people take responsibility so that when something happens that you can't protect against, you're going to have a community that's not going to fall apart.
One of the things that we have seen with the September 11th that highlights this point, I believe, is the unbelievable outpouring of support for the firemen and policemen and others who have displayed true character. And people have really embraced that and been touched by those gestures. And I think part of what I think Peter is highlighting is that that's not just something that happens for children. That's a teachable moment and teaching responsibility, and that we all inhabit this earth together, and we have a responsibility not only for ourselves, but for our friends and for our family and for our teachers and for our institutions, that is as important for many of us as teaching them how to read and write and do science experiments, and that should be kind of woven into the fabric of our educational systems.
It's changed us all, I think, to see that angle of what happens in a really major crisis. I think we've all learned from it. Dr. Feinberg, what would you want parents to know when there's a crisis situation and their kids are in a school setting?
I answer that question reminding you and your listenership about the scenes that we all were exposed to when Columbine exploded, the worst school shooting in this country's history, that we saw constant scenes and sights of parents rushing to the school, wondering where their children were, whether their children were okay or not, whether their children were even alive. And so part of what I think needs to be done is that schools and parents have to work in partnership on this agenda to know that when you send your child to school, that provisions have been made to make sure that your children are safe and that in a crisis situation, there are procedures that can and will be implemented to maximize the safety and security of children. We want to keep parents informed of what is going on when a crisis occurs, and that means factually accurate information disseminated through multimedia approaches, whether that's through the email, through phone messages, whether it's community cable resources that parents can tune in, whether it's particular off-school sites that are set up for periodic informational opportunities for parents. But parents are like all of us. If we don't know, we imagine the worst. And so giving parents information before, during, and after the fact will help allay some of that anxiety. And you also want to make sure that parents understand that the exercises that are done in terms of practicing, whether it's a lockdown exercise or a fire drill or an evacuation drill, these are important exercises for the children, for the staff to do on a regular basis so that, God forbid, when a situation occurs, people will function automatically as opposed to emotionally and irrationally.
You know, I think if there's a real emergency, my first reaction is to get under a table and duck and cover. Because that's what I learned in school. Not that that tells you how old I am or anything. What would you recommend that parents do to prepare and support the children without scaring them too much?
We can teach children important life skills along with core academic areas to empower them to be able to handle the vagaries of life regardless of what they might be. And I think we can do that. I think we have skilled teachers and skilled mental health professionals in the schools and skilled administrators who really can kind of bring life to that without terrifying the children in the process.
Mr. Branch, what differences have you seen in the emphasis and support structure for crisis among the different age groups that you're dealing with at your school?
Hopefully you're going to treat your high school students as individuals that can reason, that can take on information and think about it and make judgments based upon that. It's, I think, unwise to tell them or to tell any child an untruth. I was sorry to see that some school administrators felt the best thing to do on September 11th was to tell falsehoods about what was happening, and I think that's a mistake. You may not tell the whole truth. You don't want to frighten a young child. And as I said at the beginning, we did different things in terms of grouping. We did different things in terms of the information that we gave out. But at the next time round, when we have to tell a child to do something because we want them to believe us. And so I think that you've got to be very honest about that. But I do think you have to look at how they're going to react. And there's no question that we were all frightened by the event. But putting in context, I didn't believe the sky was falling, astounded at how much was falling out of the sky, but I did not believe the sky was falling. But certainly little children cannot put it into the overall context. And so it's important for a reassurance is a very important part of this for all of us, and all the more so at the younger grades. Middle school children can be very deceptive because they have all the attributes of, I shouldn't say adulthood, but certainly of adolescence, but they're not very far along and they're still very vulnerable. And so One of the things that is important is when children say things or ask questions, don't answer what you think they're asking. Find out what they really are asking and try and probe more deeply into their issue rather than assume that you know what is troubling them. They will give you signals, and it's important to provide the response that really gets to where they are.
That's like the story of the little boy who asked his mother where he came from, and she gave him this wonderful lecture on reproduction, and she got all done, and he said, "Oh, that's funny. Johnny was from Chicago."
That's right.
So
we'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about schools in a stressful time.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Ted Feinberg and Mr. Peter Branch about schools in a stressful time.
On our website, www.nasponline.org.
You need to spell that, NASP.
N-A-S-P, online, one word, .org. We have specific information for parents, teachers, administrators, on how to talk to children about this crisis. And I'm particularly cognizant of the fact that since September 11th, we have had close to 6 million hits on our website relative to the information we've put up there. So
one of them was mine.
Obviously, I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you. Obviously, that information is resonating with people not only in this country, but around the world, and we're particularly proud of that.
Is there something that you might like to add before we have to close?
This is not a peripheral issue for children, for families, for schools. It is really a core issue, and it is not just central to the crisis of the moment. It really is important for children to learn how to deal with the crises that life throws at all of us, and it's an educational opportunity.
I think also both of you are saying, go ahead, ask your school, as parents, ask your school, what are your plans for handling emergency situations? You have a right to know, but sometimes it's your job to go and ask, particularly in a larger school setting.
Schools should have a written crisis management plan, mm-hmm. whatever their title is, and I think that it's legitimate to ask for that. There are going to be some things that schools are going to keep private because of the nature of the trying to protect against an intruder. They don't want to reveal everything. I'd be interested in asking Dr. Feinberg about the issue of counselors who come from outside. It has been our practice to rely upon the teachers and the counselors within the school that the students know. It just seems to me that those that have been in the closest contact and know the children personally are best able to be supportive.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that part of the training that we have done, and we've done over 450 trainings around the country, we stress the fact that we want to empower people in the schools who know the children for exactly the reasons that Peter has mentioned, who have familiarity, who have the trust of children, who know the families, who know the unique aspects of those child's lives, to develop the skills needed. Now, that being said, they also need to know their limitations, and that when the nature of the crisis exceeds the resources within any school, there needs to be secondary resources that can be called upon. But your point is very well taken. In Columbine, there were 5,000 people who were volunteering to come in to that community. It would have added a crisis to a crisis. And we make a strong plea that let us help train school people to take care of their own situations to the extent that that's possible.
Are there resources that you would particularly suggest for parents who want to learn more about these issues?
Certainly contacting the American Red Cross at www.redcross.org. the Federal Emergency Management Agency at www.FEMA/EMI/CERT/index. And lastly, what I would recommend is the National Victims Assistance Organization at www.trinova.org. Those are good starting points for a wealth of information about crisis response.
Scholastics Magazine also has a somewhat interactive site for students as well as for parents. As you move beyond the immediate crisis, how do you help students feel some control, the ability to raise money on behalf of survivors, the ability to express themselves in their art, in their writings, in their journals? These are ways in which students can vent, express,
process,
and I think that's very important. And a school, go back to an original comment, a school that sticks rigidly to the curriculum and doesn't engage in dialogue with the students, doesn't open up opportunities for expression on these topics, is not helping the situation. And the next time round, the child will be more vulnerable. So these are very important things to do, to deal with the crisis and then deal with the emotions that the crisis has brought forward.
Thank you very much, both of you, for coming forward and helping us to help parents deal with this very difficult time and giving ideas in which the schools can really respond productively and helpfully. So Dr. Ted Feinberg and Mr. Peter Branch, thanks so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Delighted.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Brown Penny Fund of the Jewish Communal Fund. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.